Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, ladies, and hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I am Jack Fowler, the star and namesake of this show. Victor Davis Hanson is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne Amash Obusky Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor has a website. It's called The Blade of Perseus. The web address is victorhanson.com. You should visit it. I'll tell you why later in the podcast, also why you should be subscribing. Important to note, Victor, I think that we are recording on March 24th, Sunday, and there's big news coming tomorrow. Donald Trump's huge bond payment for the Letitia James case in New York. And that your thoughts on whatever happens tomorrow, we'll have to wait until you and Sammy talk later in the week. But today, folks, we're going to get Victor's thoughts on a lot of people, some governors of California and Texas, some cranks. I'll fill in the name when we get to it. We have some quitters, and hopefully we'll have time to talk about squatters. And we'll get to all this right after these important messages.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, the first thing before we get to your thoughts on Gavin Newsom, about who you, over the, you know, the last couple of years, you have given your thoughts about him amply, but he's just come off a very close political victory in the state of California, so it's worth getting your thoughts on that. And also, we haven't really ever talked at length about Governor Abbott of Texas, so I think hearing your reflections on how he does as a governor is our listeners would like to hear that. But before we do that, I just want to make a note about something that happened today, Victor, on Meet the Press. And it's been in the news the last few days. Ronna McDaniel, who's no longer the chairman of the Republican Party, the RNC, Republican National Committee, she got a contract to become a talking head on NBC and MSNBC. This was about, I think, 2 or 3 days ago. And that set off a ton of commentary and angst and anger, and people like Keith Olbermann, we're not going on this network anymore, blah, blah. How could you have her on? Well, this morning, Ronna McDaniel was on Meet the Press and with Christine Welker, who's now the host of that show. And after her appearance, Chuck Todd, the former host of the show, came on, and he attacked NBC, the parent company, And he said, "Our bosses owe you an apology." He was talking to Christine Welker. On the grounds of Ronna McDaniel essentially cannot be believed. She's a political hack. Why should we believe anything she has to say on this show or anywhere on this network? And Victor, I want to get your thoughts. I think they may be kind of obvious, but Chuck Todd is himself a political hack. Before he became a journalist, he was working on Capitol Hill for Tom Harkin. He worked on political campaigns. We have over at ABC, George Stephanopoulos, you know, one of the great political hacks / media titans. This stuff has gone on for years, and the gumption of someone like Chuck Todd, whose wife also, by the way, is a big Democrat Party fundraiser, to call out someone who happens to be a Republican for appearing on Meet the Press or being a talking head on that network is kind of shocking. Your thoughts, Victor, before we move on to the governors?
Well, I mean, all of these people believe that they deserve exemptions because, after all, their morality is so morally superior to our own. So George Stephanopoulos can be, you know, campaign manager for Bill Clinton, and then he can get on ABC, and it doesn't matter at all. And if anybody else tries that, when Karl Rove goes on occasionally to Fox, then he's partisan, he's prejudiced, he's biased, Fox News. But they don't look at it the same way because they feel that the left is here to make us all equal and the right is here to reward the greedy. And so everything falls into place from those essential postulates. And they're unapologetic about it. There is no such thing. It's like the Hamas with collateral damage. There is no word in the Hamas vocabulary for Jews as collateral damage. There's just damage, killing Jews. And if you say to them, when you send rockets in, you have collateral damage. They said, no, we don't. We send rockets in to kill Jews. And we don't care whether they're military or. And it's the same thing with the vocabulary has the same idea. There is no such thing as a conflict of interest for a left-wing journalist. Part of the training to be on TV is to work for a major Democratic politician or a president. It's where they all are. And they don't see anything wrong with it. And they look at everything asymmetrically, you know. It's Joe Biden has a perfect right to take out files. He has a perfect right to put them in four or five different places. He has a perfect right to put them in sloppy boxes that fall apart for 30 years. He has a perfect right to get on tape and say in 2017, six years before he told the authorities that he had classified. His speechwriter, ghostwriter, I should say, has a perfect right to delete any tapes that incriminate. That's just the way it is. And we have to get used to it. That's their attitude to us. And I don't know why we being traditional America or conservative America, can't see that. But the other thing is, it's not a good... I don't know what to say. It's not a good image. It's not good optics for the chairman of the Republican National Committee. Suddenly, after quitting or being forced out, not even taking a breather, and then confirming all these suspicions that the MAGA base has whenever there's a rhino Republican like Liz Cheney or Ronald McDonald, they always say, well, they're just angling for a position on left-wing cable news. So if you have that suspicion, fair or not, you would think that she would wait a year or two if the reports are true that she's actually going to go on there. And then the question is she just going to be an analyst or a guest, or is she going to be a regular on a show or something, or have her own show? I doubt that's going to happen. I think she's just going to appear and make some money. All of these people are Washington creatures, and they don't want to leave. And when you leave government, what do you do, Jack? You have about three options. You go to work for the media or TV as an expert, or you go to a think tank, or you go to as a lobbyist, or you go on a corporate board. That's about it. None of them really go back home and go get a job. Most of, right. Joe Biden's never had a job outside of government, I think, in his life. So they're not going to go back. Chuck Schumer, what's he going to do? None of these people are going to do anything. They have to... They don't go into private enterprise. They don't do anything. And so when she left the RNC, she had a pretty good lifestyle. The obvious question is, I can't go to a university or a think tank in Washington. I obviously can't, you know, I'm not going to be a very good lobbyist, I think, or right. maybe too transparent, or maybe I can go on a speaking tour or something. I don't think anybody's going to pay for her to speak. And so it's basically go into the media and then triangulate, or on the one hand, on the other hand. So during the campaign, we'll see certain things. Donald Trump will say something, or he'll do something, and they'll go crazy at MSNBC, and then they'll turn to her and say, what is going on here? Well, on the one hand, on the other hand, and she right. will, that's what she will do.
Victor, I think you were unfair to Joe Biden. He did run Big Guy Enterprises while he was
You're right. You're right. He did have a multi-million dollar corporation that made $25 million, the big guy.
Yeah. Okay, Victor, let's move on, get your thoughts about, let's start with one of your favorite politicians. That's Gavin Newsom, the governor of California. We'll say he won because he certainly pressed hard, but barely won a referendum for $6.4 billion to spend on homeless housing, et cetera. You know, he's taken, a victory lap, but I think it's a sign that, plus maybe Steve Garvey's, how he's doing in the polls, maybe showing some sort of pushback in California. I mean, it's hard to say he won that it's a sign of defeat or a forthcoming defeat. But anyway, Victor, your thoughts about this most recent Newsom major political event?
Well, he has no credibility. Gavin Newsom told us years ago he was going to spend $10 billion, and that was going to solve the problem. And the problem is we're supposed to, I don't know, get beds somewhere in California. I don't know what they want, 10,000 beds. Well, that wouldn't even start to, I mean, there's 400,000 people out there. And I'm not sure the problem is they don't have a bed. I mean, they have relatives. The problem is they're on drugs or they have mental problems. And I just don't. And then here we are in California, and it's been weeks since the ballot barely squeezed. And left-wing California just won by a fraction. But the point is, the home of Silicon Valley can't even count votes. Here we are at the end of March, and we just now find the end. And then we're $76 billion in debt. So Gavin Newsom should be talking about right now, where's this money going to come from? Is he going to cut? I see none of these people in California in the legislature. And I mean, the names that I remember that were associated with it were Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles, left wing, Hilda Solis, an old retread from the legislature. I think she's on the L.A. Board of Supervisors, Janet Hahn. And it's the idea that homeless people, if you just spend more money and you go get them a hotel, they'll be fine and out. No, they won't. And the question is, why didn't we have homelessness before this? And when we did, what did we do about it? We had mental institutions, and we put them in there whether they wanted to be or not, in some cases unfairly. But apparently we could do a better job. So the people who are mentally ill should be put there. The people who commit crime should be jailed. They should be told they can't urinate, defecate, inject, fornicate, whatever, in public spaces. But the larger problem is that it's a family breakdown. And, you know, when I was growing up out here in rural California, we had a cousin who had dengue fever. He was a veteran. And so he had a high temperature in the Philippines and was really had brain damage from it. And he had a little bicycle, and he rolled out here to the farm every day, and everybody fed him and took care of him. He had a little apartment. They all family came in and checked on him. And when he didn't feel too well, he came out here and just stayed. And that was, I mean, then, as I said, my mother's sister was crippled with polio when she was six. couldn't just deform 17 operations in the Masonic Hospital in San Francisco, and they made breaking all of her bones and patching them together and made her worse. She went in there kind of crippled and hobbled, and she came back bedridden for the rest of her life. She stayed in the living room. So I grew up with her in the house that I am now, with her in the living room. No right. such idea that she was going to be homeless or thrown out. No right. such thing as my cousin was going to be thrown out, or I'd see him, you know, as a brain damaged military veteran on the tracks. And then I said to my grandfather one time, how many people did you have here in 1932? And he had no money. He said, we had 27. And I said, well, where did they live? He said, we put them in the water tower. We put them in the barn. We put them in the shed. We doubled up, and we had a sign on our one indoor bathroom about each person ahead of time. We have a communal pot. And I said, well, where did they all come? He said, every 10 or 12 days, I went down to the Selma railroad tracks. And I just went up and down to see if there was any relative coming in on a train or somebody that we knew in our family that was out there camped in what I guess they called it hobo jungle.
Right.
And that's what they did. Everybody did that.
Yeah.
But part of the problem is that no one wants to do that with any members of their family. None. So when we have disabled people, or we have people who are mentally ill, they're just on their own. And yeah. California, it's not confined to it, but it's largely more in a blue state, because their attitude is to throw a lot of money on it and not think about it and let people do whatever they want to do. I was riding a bike last year into Santa Rosa along the bike path. When you get into Santa Rosa, downtown Santa Rosa, once in a while they clean it up, but you can smell human excrement. And I went all the way, and I can remember stopping at the end of the bike trail, right next to the Santa Rosa courthouse, Sonoma County. And right there in front of the courthouse, I was just got off my bike, and I was sitting there, and a homeless person, a woman came out, and I was talking to my wife on the phone to say that I was there and I was on my way back. And this woman tried to hit me. She just came up and tried to punch me as hard as she could. And she said, you're making fun of me. I said, no, I'm not. And I pushed her away. And then she started screaming and yelling and throwing stuff. And that happens all the time. And we're the wealthiest nation in history, and yet we're the poorest as far as the ability to deal with people. Got a million people. So when you don't have the money, and California doesn't have the money, it's 70, as I said, 76 trillion billion in debt. We've just paid a huge sum to professors, to UC, CSU, California union employees, the government, SEIU workers. And still, this wouldn't be a problem. It wouldn't be as bad a problem, Jack, if this was not the most taxed and regulated state in the world.
Right.
It really is. When you pay, now we're going to go up to 14% on the top rates. And Biden wants to go up to 39. So you can see in California, it's going to be easily 55. That's not even counting Obamacare, property tax, sales tax. And we're the most regulated, so we don't have enough housing. And yet they have all these mandates about, you know, you can't have natural gas stoves in new homes. Right. You can't do this. You have to do this. And so the builders we're not building homes fast enough. And then we have a completely open border. So in the California way of thinking, how dare you say no to anybody? So now when Texas controlled its border, bravo for Texas, people are coming in here in Arizona and California. We're welcoming them. And we already had the largest number of illegal aliens of any state. We traditionally have. We had half of all of illegal aliens until this recent influx. So when they all come in, and I can tell you how we deal with it. We deal with it with the Victor Hansen community solution, Jack. So yesterday I drove in to town, and I came back, and I counted the number of, what would we call them? I guess we call them additional dwelling units. Is that what you guys call them too, ADUs? I think California uses that term. Well, I started I thought I was going to count a half mile, okay? Half mile to my house. So I turned right on my street and I counted the ADUs. And the first place on the right, I found four. And then the next place, I found one and then two. That was seven. And then two more was nine. And then I could think I found 10. I couldn't see, so that was 19. Yes, I don't know what was in the orchard. I think there's four or five from aerial photos.
Are but these campers or just a hodgepodge of things?
No. These are people who are illegal or they're in gangs.
I mean, are the ADUs, are they on wheels? Are they campers? Or are they all kinds of structures?
They're all kinds. They're lean-tos. They're garages. They're Winnebagos that don't run. Yeah. They're Winnebagos that do run.
Right.
They're everything. There's one with a barber chair. I guess they have haircuts. There's one that used to have a daycare center. And then as I go down, there was another. Well, anyway, what I'm saying is I counted about somewhere between 20 and 25 on as I came on this side of the road. If I had done the other side of the road, there was one, two, three, four, six. So there's about 26 units near me within a half mile radius of people living there. All of them are from across the border. Okay. All of them were former farmhouses, single family units, zone farmhouses of small farms that I grew up with. Every single place that I referred to with these units, they don't know who lived there, but I can tell you the exact name of the family, whether it was the Duckhorns, the Fanukis, or who you name it. I won't name some of them because they're still alive and around here, but I remember every single one. The Duckhorns, I remember every one of them. And there was no locks on the doors. There was no crime. And they were immaculate. And they had no money. They were poor, poor, small farmers. And today, as I drove by, the reason I mention this, Jack, is there was one, two, three, four Fresno County Sheriff's SWAT teams there on one side of the road. And they were going into, I think they were going into La Casa de Putas, which was on Google. The area that had prostitution. I don't want to get into this. I'm going to stop because it's getting too close to home. But the point is that that's what California is. That's how we handle the homeless problem, is that you drive into any San Joaquin Valley town or any rural area within 3 miles of the city limits, and you do not see a single house. You see a single house with four or five illegal buildings around it. And sometimes they're tapped into the septic tank, and sometimes they just have porta potties. There's a place near me that must have, I don't know, 80 porta potties lined up. I guess they're for sale. And I think people just dig a hole and they put the porta potty over it. There's no such thing anymore of what I grew up with. It's called mosquito abatement, where the mosquito abatement person came in and sprayed standing water, or the Fresno County the animal protection guy came in and just drove into your place and said, I need to see your dogs. I need to see their tags. I need to see if they have rabies shots. That all went out the window, doesn't it? And when we go back in time, we're going back in civilization.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We're getting back to the 1920s or 30s, but without the morality of that period.
Yeah. Sounds very Mad Max. Well, Victor, we'll head a little south to Texas and get your thoughts about Governor Greg Abbott. We'll do that right after these important messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'd like to mention first that Victor has that website. VictorHanson.com is the web address. The Blade of Perseus is the name, and on it you will find links galore to Victor's American Greatness essays, to his syndicated columns, the archives of these podcasts, various other appearances that Victor makes, links to his books, past, present, forthcoming, and on May 7th, the next book is out, folks. The End of Everything. Victor, sounds like you just talked about The End of Everything. And there are ultra articles. You need to subscribe in order to read them. That's $5, gets you in the door, $50 discounted for the full year. Victor writes two or three ultra pieces exclusively for the Blade of Perseus every week. So check that out, victorhanson.com. And while I'm mentioning these things, Victor, I might as well also say you're writing a lot for X/Twitter. At VD Hanson is Victor's handle there. And on Facebook, VDH's Morning Cup. By the way, there's an unofficial, the Victor Davis Hanson Fan Club, which was a great site. Check that out, too. Victor, we have never really talked about Greg Abbott.
No, we haven't.
Doing tough things and good things, I think, in Florida. What are your thoughts about him?
Well, he, along with Ron DeSantis, really changed the entire discourse on illegal immigration. They really did. And that was the busing up after having their states overrun, the busing of illegal to Martha's Vineyard and then into New York City and then into Chicago. Had they not done that, the left would have said, this is so great. 10 million people are coming across. It's going to mean that Senate in the near future, with the next Senate, we're going to get more we're going to get more congressional districts, and they're going to be staffed by people. The residents are going to be people who have feel to us, thanks to us letting them in. Ha ha. Or maybe they'll even be able to vote in the next election, because given that 70% of the ballots cast won't be cast on election day, and it will be very hard to authenticate. That was their attitude, is what I'm trying to say, Jack. And now it was, how dare you do that? We're sanctuary cities. We're sanctuary cities. We have to take these people. You don't have to take them. You're non-sanctuary cities. But sanctuary cities are not supposed to take them. It's supposed to be a virtue signal. We believe in virtue signaling. We believe in sanctuary cities in the abstract. How dare you make it concrete? And that was their attitude. Then all of a sudden, the Democrats and Joe Biden said, oh, my God, 2024 is here. What are we going to do? All the people are angry. All of our people are angry in Illinois and New York and California. We don't care about that because we're going to win those states anyway. But they're mad in Michigan, and they're mad in Arizona, and they're mad in Georgia. They're mad in Nevada. We got to do something. Greg Abbott, he's responsible for all that in large part by defending the border of Texas and sending people northward to share the burden. And he was very articulate. He and his team said, you know what? People are coming in here by the thousands, and we don't want to be greedy. We don't want to monopolize illegal aliens. We want to let people have the enjoyment of having people come in illegally to the United States, because they're on record that they wanted to protect them from mean, horrible officials like myself. So because you can't contact ICE when you get in trouble, we'll make it easy for them. And that's what caused the Democrats to go ballistic. And that made them think of a way to trap naive Republicans into that crazy immigration bill that, you know what, they denied it, but basically it was 5,000 people could come in before anything really happened. And then they were going to hire more facilities and facilitators rather than to stop catch and release or make people apply for refugee status in their own country or build the wall. And why the Republicans, some Republicans went for that, I don't know. But the point I'm making, it's an election year. So they were trying to do something on immigration like they're doing during the midterms, draining the petroleum reserve or telling the Ukrainians not to hit Russian oil facilities. It's an election year, so they don't really care about principle, just to win the election and retain power. But Greg Abbott, I mean, when you saw that pop wire, it worked for a while. And then I think somebody on the Mexican side of the border started reading some histories of World War One and think, wow, there were ways that people threw canvases over barbed wire. They threw blankets over barbed wire and they cut them as they, and they started swarming through it. So he's going to need more wire. But it's a very tricky thing because he can say that this isn't a federal border. A state has a right to defend its own border. Our border just happens to share your border and be on the Rio Grande. Or he can say, it says in the Constitution that it's a duty of the federal government to protect us from an invasion. You're not doing it. That's some reason that was, should, seems to me an unimpeachable offense. But right, we saw what happened when the House tried to impeach Mayorkas the first time. They couldn't even get their act together. And that was, I guess, two or three resignations before where we are now with a one or two seat advantage in the House. So, yeah, Greg Abbott's a good guy and he did a good thing. And he taught people that you don't have to be the receptacle for policies of Joe Biden. And they and the left wanted that to happen. They want, they said to themselves, there's never going to be a California like, you know, Ronald Reagan, right, or George Dukmejian or Pete Wilson or even Arnold Schwarzenegger. We flipped that. And there's never going to be a Nevada of the old Paul Laxalt days. That's gone. And there's never going to be an Arizona of Barry Goldwater, even John McCain. And there's never going to be a Colorado again that's purple. It's going to be. And we did that with immigration. And we're going to do it. We're going to keep doing it. And somebody finally figured out, said, well, we'll share the wealth with you. You know, we don't right, have to. We'll do it in your own home states. And then they started thinking, well, this is really bad. Eric Adams, remember he was greeting illegal aliens with water and handshakes?
Right.
And there, when there was one or two a week or somebody. And then all of a sudden he thought, wow, they don't care. They don't care because New York's going to vote blue no matter if we have illegal aliens or not. It's not going to tip anything. We're already blue. And Chicago people said, they don't care. California, they don't care. Because they're blue states and their electoral votes are already in the bag. So who cares if they're impacted by illegal aliens? Because there's no profit to the Biden team. They're not a swing state. And all of a sudden, right, they don't care about us, do they? And so that was what Abbott and DeSantis and a few other people did. They really changed the entire dynamic and discourse on illegal immigration. And they really brought attention to people who were very violent. And along with the Lake and Riley. And then, you know, you could see that the people don't care on the left about the violence, the drugs. For them, 100,000 deaths with fentanyl or Lake and Riley or Kate Steinle, that's all collateral damage.
Yeah, and they deserved it anyway. It's yeah, probably deep, not all that deep-seated. Hey, Victor, you mentioned before, two things. You mentioned Biden, foreign policy related to 2024 politics. And swing states. And John Hendricker's post on Powerline blog about Biden's foreign policy, he's talking, he links to a guy named Christopher Miller, a tweet, and it's titled, the text here is, "Scoop, the U.S. has urged Ukraine to halt attacks on Russia's energy infrastructure, warning senior SBU and GUR officials," I think those are Ukrainian officials, "that drone strikes risk driving up global oil prices and provoking retaliation." But the inference, more than inference, from John, and I think from you, Victor, is that this is really about, don't drive oil prices up in an election year. Let's contour the war over my ability to get reelected. Your thoughts? Well,
yeah, it's exactly like 2022, but on the eve of the midterms, everybody said it was going to be a blowout. And Biden team went into action. They started to forgive student loans. They went to the Venezuelans. They went to the Iranians. They went to the Saudis. Remember, the Saudis were a pariah. Pariah. That's what Biden said. They are a pariah state. And then he started begging them to pump oil. And then they took the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which I think Trump left it at about 650,000 barrels of oil, million barrels of oil, and they started to drain it. And now it's down to 340,000. So they drained half of it, right? And that'll go down way lower. They'll drain it again. But the idea is that oil and its refined products of gas and diesel are icky, they're smelly, and they're gooey, and they're awful. And they pollute all the world, and they're going to kill us. So what we're going to do is we're going to outlaw them. I guess we were outlawing internal combustion engines in California. You can't have a truck or something within 10 years. And we're going to make everybody buy an EV. But the icky, gooey stuff is sweet and wonderful up until November. So we need to get a lot. And if you actually look, Jack, at the daily production of oil in the United States, it has gone up. The problem is that world consumption has gone up, and there's not as much Russian gas and oil as there was before the war. There's a lot, but not as much. And OPEC has not been going full blast. So the United States is pretty much almost back quietly. Have anybody heard Biden say, well, I want to take credit. I'm back up to the Trump level. No, they're quiet about it. Everybody thinks they've cut way back. They're going back up to Trump levels, and they're probably already there now. And the idea is to get people to be happy that the inflation was bad, but now it's going down and gas is back to the Trump levels due to Joe Biden. And part of that project is they cannot screw around with the world supply of oil. And that means oil is going to be, as I said, it's going to be good for the next 5 months. And they're going to go to the Ukrainians and say, don't screw around with the Russian oil. And the Ukrainians are going to say, but we're in a war, and you're sending us all these weapons. And we're taking missiles and drones and planes and bombs and tank shells and artillery shells. And our point is that we're going to disrupt the oil and the transport and the refinery. No. Don't do it. That would raise the price of gas right before, and Joe wouldn't get reelected. So that's what it's about, and we'll see that a lot. We'll see three things happen. Quietly, they will try to squeeze every drop out of gas and oil fields in the United States. I don't think they'll do the really, I don't know what the word is, controversial steps. They won't reopen ANWR, or they won't go back to Keystone, or they won't tell the Canadians they can start working on the tar sands. That's too public, too above board. But they will go to the fracking and horizontal drilling industry and say, get going, you guys. Here's the leases. Get going. Here's more offshore capacity. Get us more before the election. And then they will tell the Ukrainians, do not disrupt. And then they're saying to themselves, if anybody's curious why they have attacked 120 American installations in the Middle East, and why the Houthis in 2 seconds could be prevented from shutting down the Red Sea, and why the Iranians are behind this and nobody in Washington cares, there's two answers. And they all have one common theme, both. There's an election coming up, and the last thing Joe Biden wants are these wars that his laxity and his destruction of deterrence helped cause in Ukraine and in the Middle East get out of hand before the election. But more importantly, he does not want Iranian and Middle East oil off the market. He does not want the Red Sea closed so that oil tankers can't go out and in. He does not want Iran bombed or hurt so it stops production of oil. And he doesn't really want Russian oil put back. He brags about sanctions, but that's not an election year. So we're going to see that. No war, which means we're going to be passive, and that's good. We won't respond, but I think that will encourage war. And then second, they're not going to do anything that endangers the world supply of oil and thereby the price of gasoline in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Georgia and Nevada and Arizona. No. That's what these guys are very different than the Republicans. Everybody says that Republicans are capitalist and they're conniving and they understand, but no. It's the Democrats. They are willing to do whatever it takes. You can take the most left-wing squad member, and if Hakeem Jeffries says you're going to vote and not deviate one vote, and if you have a ruptured appendix, you're going to be on a stretcher. They have that type of discipline, not the Republicans. They don't think about that. They're just all over the map.
Yeah.
Like cats. You can't herd them.
Well, and they run away. We're going to get your thoughts in a little bit, Victor, on some of these Republicans that are disappearing. But first, changing from foreign policy to, I guess, conservative celebrity-dom, Candace Owens has parted ways with Ben Shapiro and the Daily Wire. And, you know, Victor, she's got a big footprint in right of center world. Personally, I'm just to say, I'm not necessarily a fan, didn't hate her, but never saw what it was all about. Although, interestingly, a few years ago, I was at that Freedom Fest, the big libertarian to-do in Vegas. And the person that got just brought the house down of all the speakers they had was Candace Owens. She connects with people. But seems to be a increasing number of kind of conspiracies that have come out of her of late. And any thoughts you have, Victor, about her? I don't know that she was defenestrated from the Daily Wire. Maybe she was, but her parting of the ways.
Well, she was... Yeah, in political podcasts, I think she was often one or two or three. She has a huge audience. And, she says things that are very, she just said, I'm free now. I'm free at last. Basically, that I guess she thought that she was censored by being on the Daily Wire. And she said other things. You can't serve both God and country. Money, I don't know what that meant. She said that there was what did you say? There was a cabal in Hollywood.
Jews in Hollywood and Washington. I think there was even a fake moon landing.
Yeah, and she said
seriously.
That Macron's wife is really, a man?
With this
male genitalia, he's transgendered or something. So I don't know what to make of it. I've met her before. I thought she was pleasant. She's very young, and I think she's in... Even now, after being on the scene for a decade, she's only in her early 30s. And I've met her before. I've met her husband. They were very pleasant. But Kanye West is completely an utter anti-Semite.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't... I don't know. I think when she was a rising star, so to speak, I think Ben Shapiro and they welcomed her on her. And it was a mutually advantageous relationship. She brought a lot of traffic to him, and his resources helped her reach another level. But this conspiracy stuff about Macron's wife and the Jews did this and the Jews did that and the Jews, it's not sustainable. And so she's gone. And what does that mean? Does that mean she says she's free? Does that mean that she felt that she could not further pursue these conspiracy theories? Is that what they are? There's more Jewish conspiracies in Hollywood that we haven't heard about that she couldn't disclose because she was working for a Jewish run, she thinks, I guess, Daily Wire, and now she'll be free to do whatever she wants. If that's true, I don't think it's going to work. So I don't know what to say about all. I'm not tied in. I don't say that with any arrogance. I'm out in the middle of nowhere, and I work at the Hoover Institution. I rarely go to the East Coast. I know people that I like in the conservative movement a lot, but I'm not tied into the younger. I should be, but I'm not. I don't know what turning point. Those guys have an enormous. I know a little bit about Dennis Prager's wonderful operation, but a lot of the movement and the conservative, the traffic, youth enthusiasm comes from Candace Owens and Ben Shapiro and Charlie Kirk, and that's. And I don't follow it. I'm not saying that as an aloof, arrogant bastard. I think it's valuable, but I don't know what they're doing every day. I don't know what she's doing. I don't know what the point is. Is it she's angry at Israel or foreign wars that we're involved? We're not involved in Israel's war. We're giving them arms. I guess we're going to cut them. But I don't understand what she means. So, and I remember her when she first came on the scene. I think she voted for Obama. She was an Obama supporter. And she had a statement that she was no longer going to vote for Obama. I think she's been very successful in some ways in, as being sort of the face of Black America's questioning of was the Democratic Party and the liberal agenda in Black interest.
Black sense.
Yeah, she's absolutely right. It was not. If you look at the status of the inner city, et cetera, et cetera. It was in the interest of a very, very wealthy, tiny black elite, like Claudine Gay and DEI czars and those people, or people like Al Sharpton. It was in their interest, but not the interest of the people who live in the inner city. But in any case, I don't know what her purpose is. I guess she has such a name recognition, she doesn't really need to be associated with the Daily Wire. She can go out like Megyn Kelly, right, and have her own. Megyn Kelly really blasted her, by the way, for her anti-Semitic stuff.
Yeah.
But.
Well, she's a brand. There's no question. She is a brand.
The thing about it I don't understand is I have never seen an atmosphere where it's open season in the United States on Jews. By that, I mean, this administration will not talk about anti-Semitic violence, or if it does, it instantly mentions Islamophobia. But when you look at the actual FBI statistics, such as you can find them, it's not even close. There is one type of I think it's half the hate crimes are directed against Jews. Islamophobia is not an epidemic.
Yeah.
And yet, in fact, if you look at the people who are committing the hate crimes against Jews, it's coming a lot from people with Middle East connections. So I don't understand. There was an event in New Jersey, a Jewish event, where people, you know, showed up and tried to harass them. And if you have any insignia, a pin, anything that would identify you as Jewish, and you were on a major elite campus, I'm not talking like where I taught, Fresno State, I don't think people would care. But if you were at Stanford or Harvard or Yale or Princeton or Penn, it wouldn't be such an easy thing. I just walked yesterday past the Hillel Jewish Center at Stanford, and they still have a police car parked right out in front. 24/7, and they don't have a lot of resources, so there has to be something to that. And
right, well, the ADL which has done a terrible job, as we've discussed in the past, Victor, of letting wokeism grow unchecked, and now reaping the bitter fruits of it. They've done some studies. I wrote about this for Philanthropy Daily, and the number of the elite institutions, the numbers are off the charts of anti-Semitic acts. And then, of course, there's the fear. You know, you don't have to have you don't have to be a Jew and someone call you, you know, whatever.
We had a big conference. So we had 93 people come in to talk about strategic issues, military history. And I was talking to a scholar who happened to be Jewish. And I'd forgotten just for a second that there was association with Cornell, and I just happened to say, you know, this has been really bad here. We had a professor who separated, it wasn't a professor, he was a lecturer, but he separated Jews from non-Jews in his classroom and said, leave your packs or your computers over there and you see what it's like to be deprived of your property, and picked out Jews. And he said, without even blinking, well, we had a professor, like, Victor, I can top that. We had a professor that said he was exhilarated on news of the October 7th massacres.
Right.
And so it's everywhere. It's everywhere. And
even if you're not, like, I've been mistaken. I'm Roman Catholic. I think our listeners know that. But when I was at Holy Cross, I remember knocking on our friend Dan Mahoney's door. He wasn't in. It's next door neighbor. I'd say, would you tell Dan I'm there? And Dan would come back and tell me later. My friend said, you know, your friend, the Jewish guy. So a lot of, you know, if you're from New York, you know, these things happen. And I say this because on the campuses, there are anti-Semitic acts against non-Jews because they're perceived to be Jews is also a dramatic thing. So it's rampant.
Well, I mean, after October 7th, remember, everybody's got to remember, they didn't retaliate to October 20th, 21st, the IDF. That's very important. There was 13 to 14 days there where all we knew was that almost 1,200 Jews had been slaughtered, raped, mutilated, decapitated, you name it. And there were nearly 250 hostages taken. And there was exhilaration. It had nothing to do with the retaliation of the IDF. It intensified. That was a very interesting window in history because it showed you what the natural reaction of these people were to mass murder. They liked it. And as far as this, the Gazan civilians, they liked it because the polls that show, everybody said, well, Biden keeps saying the Gazans don't support Hamas. No, that's not true. The latest polls you look at are about 73% to 75%. Yeah. They were cheering. 300 to 500 of them tagged along with that mission to kill and rape and mutilate and steal and take hostage. And they were given bounties. They spat on Israeli corpses. They were just like after 9/11, they were cheering. And if Biden thinks putting a pier there and bringing supplies is going to help him in Michigan, he's absolutely unhinged, because what's going to happen is something just like what happened in Afghanistan.
Right.
No sooner are American Marines going to be out there alongside that pier and making a safe zone where trucks come off and somebody's going to blow themselves up right there. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
Putting Americans in that situation is very, very dangerous because they will not be able to protect themselves because of this administration's rules of engagement. And the stuff, how are they going to stop that stuff from not being stolen by Hamas?
Anyway, right, exactly.
Hamas
and resold.
Resold. So I guess their attitude is you just give them so much that it gets so cheap that Hamas has no monopoly on it. And they'll have to sell it. I guess that's the idea. But think of the argument. We're giving more aid to Gaza than we did before. We'll end up giving more aid to Gaza and Hamas by association. And we did it straight up before October 7th.
Yeah.
He restored the aid to Hamas that Trump had cut down through the United Nations relief workers.
You could write a piece on this, Victor. Fiction that will be, more truthful than the truth, and it would all end with dead Americans and Biden. Saying something about, oh, my son was killed too.
Well, I mean, some of the people who apparently went into Moscow and slaughtered came out of where? Afghanistan or on somewhere around the control, ISIS.
Right.
Taliban doesn't like ISIS or not. But the point was that after we left in such a humiliating fashion, to the degree there is a Taliban government, it's probably in Kandahar and Kabul, and it's going to go where it was. It's just terrorist badlands for people to operate out of.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a lot more terrorism because there's $50 billion worth of weapons that are going to be given away or sold. And the Taliban controls that along with Pakistan, I suppose. But it's going to be a mess for the next few years. Nobody even talks about it. Same thing with us getting now supplying. I mean, if you came from Mars, you would say the United States gave millions of dollars, and then there was this massacre that the people who received the money, Hamas, used the money in part to build tunnels, but to kill Jews in the most horrific attack since the Holocaust, single day attack of Jews. And then 5 months later, just think about it. We are giving Gaza more money than we did before. I know there's a need and it's a humanitarian crisis, but there's no conceptualization that they're in a war right now, and everybody says Israel should stop what they're doing, but nobody tells us what they should be doing. What should they be doing? Should they be doing what we did in Japan when we bombed Hamburg? Should they be doing what we did when we wanted to get ISIS out of Mosul? Should they do what we went house to house in Fallujah to get the Baathist and the growing ISIS people out of Fallujah? That was a paradigm, because if you look at the actual statistics of how many died as civilians and how many died as what they call militants or combatants, but they're terrorists, you'll see that the ratio is not nearly as bad of civilians killed toward armed resistors than what we did in Fallujah or Mosul. And I don't think Israel said to us, hey, wait a minute, we're getting some really frightening statistics in Mosul that while you guys are killing thousands of ISIS, you're killing thousands of civilians. And we have a general rule that we try to keep it one killer versus one civilian, or 1.3. And you're way over that humanitarian level. You better stop right now.
Right.
And I don't think that anybody in Israel is coming over here and saying, we need to get Donald Trump elected, and we've got to interfere in your politics the way that Carville did, the way is talking about getting rid of Netanyahu, the way that Bill Clinton tried to destroy the Likud party when he was president, the way Obama did. It's really amazing how they interfere in the internal politics of a sovereign allied democracy, and then they excuse it by saying, it's Netanyahu, it's okay.
Obama did it everywhere. Remember, I think he won Brexit for England by going over there and saying, if you guys vote against it, you're going to go to the back of the line.
At the end of his career, people saw who he was, that he was really in there because he was a narcissist. And he was really brilliant. The last year of his 8-year term, he just hung out at the golf course. He didn't weigh in on anything, and he just cut Netflix deals and stuff like that for his post-president multimillionaire agenda, which was successful. But my point is that he understood that the more you heard Obama and the more you saw him in action, the more you didn't like him.
Right.
And the more that you did not see him and you did not hear him and you just absorbed what the media and their idealization developed, the fake Obama, the more you liked him. First black man, articulate like Joe Biden said, suave like Harry Reid said, in racist terms, albeit. But that was the image the media cultivated. But then when you actually heard him speak, he was mean-spirited. He was racially divisive. He stuttered. He was not such a great orator when he got off the teleprompter. And the myth dissipated. He was a polarizing figure. So he just played golf and then waved everybody. He and Michelle, and she dropped the, never been proud of my country, and this is a downright mean country, and they raised the bar on it. Adopt all of that, and he became kind of indifferent to everything.
Well, Victor, we have a little time left, and we'll talk about squatters another time. But let's talk about quitters right after.
Quitters and squatter, oh boy.
Yeah, right. We'll talk about the quitters right after these final important messages.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. So, Victor, again, March 24th, Sunday, that's the day we are recording this particular episode, will be up on Tuesday, the 26th, as we head into Easter, Holy Week for those of us who are Christians of the Roman persuasion and non-Orthodox. Today's Palm Sunday, actually, as we record. So, Victor, quitters, at least one Republican this last week, Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin, who lots of people had high, tremendous hopes for him. And he announced that he was leaving Congress early. He wasn't going to serve out the term. And he left it in such a way he's leaving, I think, April 17th or something like that. That made it impossible for the seat to be filled by a special election.
Then I don't understand that. Yeah, why didn't he's leaving on April 19th. I like him. I've met him before. I've been on TV with him once. He's a good guy. But does he understand that when he leaves and Ken Buck, they only have one seat? And they're not like the Democrats. They're not regimented and they're not controllable. And the point I'm making is that what was so hard about waiting till January? I don't understand it. This is an election year. So all he has to do is say, I'm not going to run for re-election, but I will finish out my term until when? January? What's so hard about that? And I will vote and I will represent the people who sent me to Congress. And the same thing with this Ken Buck from California. Yeah. I don't mind if they don't want to run for re-election. And I've met him too, and I thought he was a good guy. But he was Mr. Colorado conservative. My gosh, he was hardcore. At least that's what he ran. I think when he ran for the Senate,
right?
And why can't they just wait? And you know, there was no bigger critic of Santos than we were that he doesn't tell the truth and he's a complete rogue. But is he any worse than Senator Menendez, who's a senator? Why didn't the Republicans just say, we're going to vote DeSantis out? Santos. We're going to vote Santos out if you get rid of Menendez. It'll be 1-1.
Or the guy that pulled the fire alarm,
Yeah. Well, that was not going to happen, but that's a good point. But they never do that. They never do that. So then they get rid of Santos. They lose a seat. Then Gallagher's not going to run. They lose a seat. And then Buck's not going to run. They lose the seat. I think there's two others, too.
There's a guy, Bill Johnson from Ohio, who took a college presidency. And there's a primary June 11th to replace him. And, of course, Kevin McCarthy.
I don't know why Kevin McCarthy. I know him. I've talked. Why did he do that? So what was so great right now when he left? I know he's angry, and I know he was done a disservice, and I know they shot themselves in the foot. And they're doing it again in this public acrimony over the speaker. And they act like they have these Republicans kill me. They act like they have a 40 seat majority, and they act like the Democrats are sort of like, I don't know, Harry Truman or JFK or maybe even Bill Clinton Democrats. Those guys are just not that bad. We have 40 seats, so we can. No, they don't. They have no margin of error. They don't have 40 seats. They have one seat. And these people are not Democrats. These are hardcore Jacobin socialists that have destroyed the country. Don't you people have any patriotic obligation to go to your voters and say, you voted for me to represent you for 2 full years. And that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to vote on the agenda that you elected me for. So I don't understand. What's so bad? College presidency? I don't know. I work at a university right now, Stanford University. They fire the college president. We have an interim president, Richard Salyers. Seems to be doing fine. What was so hard to just wait a few months and have an interim president and then he could accept the position? I don't get it. I'm just baffled by it. I'm baffled. I've met Marjorie Taylor Greene. What was so bad about Mike Johnson? I mean, I can see if he had 40 seats or 20 seats, right, and he wasn't using that power. He has no power. He has no power. He's got one. He's one defection away from being completely embarrassed. The whole Republican House. They don't understand the message that they're sending to independents, because the Democrats are just going to fuel that in this campaign, that these guys don't know what they're doing. They're undisciplined. They have public spats. And the whole point of their advertisements will be, I'm so sure glad these guys are doing, because we're a hell of a lot more radical than they are. Our squad makes Marjorie Taylor Greene look like, you know, she's Main Street American compared to who we are, but we don't fight publicly. And we always vote the way the speaker or the House minority leader, when we're in the minority, tells us to do. And that way we have discipline and we get our stuff done. And I don't know what's so hard about that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it started with Matt Gaetz and all of that. All he had to do was just say, we should have done better in the midterms. It was all of our faults. I disagree 10% of the time with McCarthy, but I'm going to wait until the next election. And I'm going to go barnstorm the country to make sure that we get more MAGA people like me. That's all he had to do. And all Kevin McCarthy had to do was saying, you know what? I was done a great disservice. I was stabbed in the back by people that I had helped elect. But I told the people of Kern County, California, that I was going to run for 2 years.
Right.
They elected me to promote an agenda. They didn't elect me to be Speaker of the House. They elected me to represent them first and maybe Speaker second. Now, I'm no longer Speaker, but I am their representative, and I fully intend to stay here until January 20th of 2025. That's what I'm going to do. But they can't do that. I don't know why. If everybody did that, if everybody just said, well, I'm going to quit, I've got a better offer, but even though you're contractually obligated for a certain tenure, I don't think that's right. It isn't, you know?
Well, we are one heart attack away from chaos, Victor. So,
This country is, I don't think anybody in Washington realizes, I know that you guys are listening to how tenuous we are right now. We have a non compos mentis president who has no idea where he is unless you pump him up with Adderall for one night a month. And that's about it. Then you have a completely unqualified, erratic, reckless, mean-spirited vice president. Then you have the most radical leftist Democratic Party in history that has an agenda that is frightening. And we've seen glimpses of it, but not the whole thing, the last 3 years, and it's almost destroyed the country. And then we're short 40,000 soldiers. We can talk about that sometime again. And our military is in desperate shape. It's underfunded. It misuses the billions that it gets. It has a woke agenda. And we are looking at two major wars abroad and China ready to pounce when they feel it's most opportune. That's where we are. And we're $35 trillion in debt. And we have a rising crime. I know that Biden logic, if you spike the crime level to historic levels and it stays flat for a year, then he reduced crime. But everybody knows that's not true. And we have no border. It's not the border's porous. It doesn't exist. People are coming across. We have no idea whether they have tuberculosis. We have no idea whether they've got a backpack full of fentanyl. We have no idea whether they've killed somebody or raped somebody. We have no idea whatsoever. We have no idea why they're coming here. They're just coming. And so put all that together, and it seems like these Republican House members would be serious, you know?
Yeah. Well, Victor, we've come to the end. That's a downer, but it's the truth. But we've got to embrace that hard reality.
I spoke to the Republican women. It was actually Lincoln Club of Tulare County last week, and there was over 300 people there. And I have never met a more energized group of people in my life. They were, they're all obviously conservative in the Tulare County. The thing people should remember about California, it is a left-wing state, but the 10 million people who are not left-wing of the 41 million are the most conservative people in the country.
Right.
And they represent the largest red state in the country. And that's, you know, the Interior Valley, the Inland Empire, the foothills, and the northern part of the state. And when you get all of those people together, they are very fired up. And it was wonderful to see all these people. They're just completely, I felt like I was on a different planet from where I'm usually at Stanford University.
Well, you were. So.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the biggest thing I notice when I walk across campus, if somebody sees you, they walk the other way there. If somebody saw you, they walk toward you.
Right. It's just, well,
it's a big difference.
Yeah. Those youthful people do know you. Hey, Victor, we've come to the time of the show where we say our thanks and appreciation, no matter what platform you listen to this, the Victor Davis Hanson Show on. We thank you. Those who listen through iTunes or Apple can also rate the show 0 to 5 stars, and Victor maintains a 4.9 plus ranking in that way. And we also read the comments. People can leave comments, and we read them all, cry over some of them. Some of them really hurt, but yeah, what the hell. I've also read the comments left on your website, Victor. But here's one comment that tags into a little thing you were mentioning before, that you're too old for this younger crowd. And this is titled, "Love the Show. I've seen you for years on Fox, but didn't know you had your own podcast until you went on Megyn Kelly's podcast for the first time. And I'm so glad you did. I listened to every episode. I'm 34 years old, and I hope you don't take this the wrong way. My grandparents passed away several years ago, and I like to think of you as another grandparent passing on life stories and wisdom. I hope you continue this podcast for many years to come." And it's signed by, oh, gosh, golly gee. So, Victor, there are younguns, relative younguns out there that like you, love you. As for me, Jack Fowler, I write Civil Thoughts, the free weekly email newsletter for the Center for Civil Society at AmPhil. Go to civilthoughts.com, sign up. When you do, you will get every Friday in your inbox my recommendations, 14 articles I've come across the previous week that I think you would enjoy reading. Is a link, and here's an excerpt. We are not charging. We are not selling names. CivilThoughts.com. Go there and sign up. Thanks very much. Victor, thank you for all the...
I will. I'll add one last thing.
Oh, sure. Yes, my friend.
About Grandpa Vic. Yes. I was at a Hoover retreat, and a middle-aged, I think very attractive woman came up to talk to me.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the institution and funding and things. And then she left. And so an older woman, older than I am, came up to me and said, "Who was that attractive woman that you were with?" And I thought she was going to say, "Is that your wife or girlfriend?" And what did she say?
Great-granddaughter.
My daughter, but I mean the age difference.
Yeah.
It was theoretically possible if I was a jail, you know, in jail or something. But it was really, and then I so when I went in to use the restroom, I looked in the mirror and I said, "You know what? She's right. I
Aww.
Do." So anyway, that's, everybody
Victor,
should look
at you're look pretty good. Me. You're pretty good looking for a 70-year-old guy. Come on. thanks to you. Thanks for the wisdom, my friend. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
We'll be back soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.